What did Adam say on December 24th? He said, "Whoa, it's Christmas Eve." That's what Adam said. What's the best Christmas present in the world? A broken drum. You just can't beat it. I asked my wife what she wanted for Christmas. She said nothing would make her happier than a diamond necklace, so I got her nothing. Knock, knock. Hannah. Hannah Partridge in a pear tree. That's what we really got. Gingerbread Man was at the doctor's. Gingerbread Man was complaining about a sore knee. The doctor said, "Have you tried icing it?" Knock, knock. Wayne. Wayne the manger. After the first two gifts were given, what did the third wise man say? "But wait, there's myrrh. And I've got lots of myrrh. I've been collecting Christmas jokes all year just for this occasion. But before we get there, let me tell you about an amazing birth. 22 years ago tonight, my sister was great with child. And after our Christmas Eve assembly, Jen and Greg drove to Buffalo to spend the night with my parents. We were going to meet them over there on Christmas Day, but at 4:30 in the morning, Jen's water broke. At 9:19, we got a call. They said, 'It is snowing over here a lot. We're coming over there to see the doctor.' And Dad got to drive on the thruway with a pregnant lady in the back seat of his car, something I've longed to do all my life. He got to do it. They went to Rochester General, the doctor examined Jen and said, 'Oh yes, let's have a baby today.' So our family packed up and we headed for the hospital. We got there, we went in. Things were very different in hospitals then. The doctor and the nurse and Mom and Dad and Linda and Carice and Jess and Greg and Jen and me were all in the birthing room at the same time. It seemed a little crowded to me. Little did I know that that was just the beginning. Scott and Leah and Scott's sister Carrie showed up shortly thereafter, so that's 14 if you're counting. In the birthing room. My brother's family showed up. He didn't want to miss all the fun. Six more, 20. At that point, they said, 'No, that's too many.' And they sent us down to the cafeteria where my other brother's family showed up, five more. Andy had stopped at Dad's house to pick up all the presents on his way over. He said, when he got there, 'I am a wise man.' I said, 'What?' He said, 'I came through the birth from afar bearing gifts.'" Said, "That's pretty biblical. Good job." We filled up two cafeteria tables. It was very loud at our tables. We got several dirty looks from nearby hospital personnel. We went to the main lobby in Rochester General and totally took over two-thirds of the furniture there. Meanwhile, Greg and Mom and Leah and the doctor and the nurses were all up in the room trying to help Jen labor. All the other adults were in the lobby laboring to keep the children from injuring themselves. So many children doing so many things to each other, to us, to the hospital. It was reassuring to know that in case of accident, we were not far from medical help, though. And Dad kept going up to the third floor and coming back down with news flashes. So here's a question. Who was the key player that Christmas Day in 1998? Some might vote for the doctor. Doctor is very important, although when we said we were very glad she was going to be there to deliver the baby that day, she said, "Oh, no, Jen's going to deliver the baby. I'm just going to catch it." I said, "That's a good line." You might think Jen was the star, the center of attention, but actually the baby was why we were there. So you might say the baby was the most important person there that day, except God created that baby. And not only did he form the baby in his mother's womb, God saved that baby's life. Mom came down to the lobby at 9 p.m. saying they were starting to get worried. Jen was exhausted. It was starting to get dangerous for her and the baby. It had been several hours and we were still stuck at 5 centimeters. So the 25 of us prayed. In Rochester General, we got together and prayed. And Greg said, upstairs, at that moment, Jen turned over and they said, "Huh, you're ready to push." Let's see, Jen's in trouble, we prayed, then Jen's good to go. Coincidence? Maybe. Or maybe it was Sammy's prayer or JD's. But maybe God intervened miraculously. We can't be sure what happened, but the next thing we knew, Ian Jeffrey Campbell had arrived. A 5-pound, 10-ounce Christmas baby who, like the first one, was a blessing from heaven, who would change everything for all the people connected to him. The first ever Christmas baby had a bunch of weird circumstances in his birth too, right? Like there were serious questions about who his father really was. And it had happened right after the federal government had passed a ridiculous new tax bill. And the local governor was an out of control egomaniacal dictator. And the pregnant couple was in the wrong town with no reservations made, and they ended up with a kitty litter box for a crib, and they put their infant in it. Question: how could they tell how heavy Jesus was at his birth? They had a way in the manger. Just thought I'd try that one. Sorry, it kind of did now. Many local garbage men came sprinting in after the baby was born to check out the newborn. They kept talking about these strange space creatures that they had been singing to them. Strange creatures. Like, what do you get if you cross a snowman with a vampire? A snowman and a vampire, frostbite. Why was the snowman looking through a bunch of carrots at the store? He was picking his nose. What do you call a snowman with a six-pack? An abdominal snowman. These shepherds said extraterrestrials, a sky full of them, and all of them pointing right here to this baby. Yeah, nothing strange about any of his birth, huh? And even more so when you look behind the scenes, where the doctor Luke tells us that while this baby's birth was totally natural, a tax collector, Matthew, says the baby's conception was totally not natural. But I want us to look at Paul's version that Vicky read for us, Paul's version of the Christmas story, because that will help us understand Santa Claus a little bit better. Here is Paul's summation of what happened in the little town of Bethlehem. Paul said, in your relationships with one another, have the same mindset as Christ Jesus, who, being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness. And being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. Paul says that Jesus was God. Jesus was with God. He was God. He had all the perks of being God. He was all-knowing. He was all-powerful. He was everywhere present. Jesus had very comfortable arrangements. I don't know what heaven's like exactly, but I do know a place where it's 85 every day and 75 every night. And I find that when I'm there in that place, very nice place, I never want to leave. I never want to go anywhere else. I am quite content there. Jesus had a very nice gig. The best, actually. It was literally perfect. But he willingly traded where he was for a one-way ticket to earth. And he took on flesh. He got birthed, and he got placed in a box that cows eat out of. And it went downhill in his life from there. That, says Paul, is what happened to the Son of God when he was born. He was made in human likeness. He was found in appearance as a man. He made himself nothing. He took off everything good that he had. He set it aside. Forget Elf on the Shelf. God put himself on the shelf. He was confined to a body in Bethlehem. Because to fix anything that's broken in this world, that's going to cost somebody something. And the more broken something is, the more it costs to fix. For instance, if I break a pair of glasses that I bought at the dollar store, I will have to pay to fix them, but not very much. If I have a tire blow out of my car, I will have to get Ray to help me, and I'll have to pay, but not really too much. Now, if I break a bone in my hand, I'm going to have to see a doctor, and I'm going to have to get a cast. I'm going to have to learn to play pickleball left-handed. That's a price to pay, but it's not really so much. But if my health really breaks, it might cost time in the hospital. It might cost chemo treatments, it might cost hundreds of thousands of dollars to fix. If I break a marriage promise, it might cost me my family, my reputation, my effectiveness in the kingdom. I might never be able to pay the price to fix that. The more broken something is in the world, the more costly it is to repair. And the world was really broken. But God really wanted to fix it. And the price was he had to come here. He had to become part of this. He had to become one of us, be born here, live here, die here. If he wanted to make things right, that was the cost. And he paid it. He came down. He became a real person. He got hurt. He paid the price. And he fixed the world at great cost to himself, both in the way he was born and in the way he died. And in Philippians 2, Paul says, the way the world will now get better is if we have that same attitude in us. If, like Jesus, we're willing to pay a price, if we're willing to eat the hurt, others can be better. If we will use what God gives us to benefit other people, this world can get better. That's the pattern that Jesus established. Paul believed that so much that he left his comfortable life and became a missionary. And Paul traveled around the world, and he experienced shipwrecks, and he was put in jails, and people made attempts on his life, and he was cold, and he was hungry, and he slept on the ground, and people spit on him, and he got bitten by snakes, and he got beaten up, and he got tortured, and he got killed once, and God brought him back. Paul knew that people were badly broken, and to fix that was going to cost a lot. And Paul was willing to pay the cost because he was like Jesus. And in Philippians 2, at the part after what Vicky read to us, Paul talks about Timothy and Epaphroditus, two guys who were willing to use what God had given them in life to help Paul help others. Timothy and Epaphroditus are good stories that your kids would do better in life if they knew the story of. But tonight I want to tell you about a different guy, another guy who paid a price to fix the world. But first, a couple more Christmas jokes, because I have a lot. What goes, oh, oh, oh? Santa walking backwards. Why do Dasher and Dancer love coffee? Because they are Santa's Starbucks. Why is Santa afraid of getting stuck in the chimney? He has claustrophobia. How does Santa keep his bathroom tiles so sparkly clean? He uses Comet. What goes woo, ho, ho, whoosh, ho, ho, whoosh, ho, ho, whoosh? Santa caught in a revolving door. Have you ever wondered why we have two storylines running at Christmas time? Why is there a story of Jesus and a story of Santa? I can help you with that one, but first, riddle me this. Why can't you even borrow 5 cents from Santa Claus? Because he's Nicholas. So in the 300s, 300 AD, there was a preacher in Asia Minor who was a really good guy. He traveled around his country. He traveled to other countries. He was telling people all the time the good news about Jesus. He was always helping people and telling them about Jesus. His parents had left him a lot of money, so he always had money. He was always helping people that needed money. When kids were sick, if houses got damaged, when families were hungry, his habit, this guy, when he found out about something like that, was he would secretly drop money off at the house. There's a story about a family that had 3 engaged daughters. They were all ready to get married, but the family didn't have enough money to pay their debts. And the 3 daughters were about to be taken away as slaves instead of getting married. So this rich preacher guy heard about that, and he went to their house one night, and he threw gold through their open window one night. And apparently the family's washer and dryer weren't working that night because the girls had hung their stockings up to dry by the fireplace. And when this guy threw the gold in the window, it landed in the girls' stockings. What are the chances? That's how the story goes. The preacher's name was Nicholas, and he loved Jesus, and he loved people. He was a bishop, so he always wore a red suit and a red hat because that's what bishops wore at that time. And it was cold where he lived, so his red coat and his red hat were always lined with white fur. And he eventually became so famous for getting involved in fixing broken things with his money, with his life, that they eventually called him Saint Nicholas. And he had his own holiday in Europe, December 6th. And when people crossed the ocean and came to America, they brought this holiday with them. Dutch immigrants used to call this guy Sinterklaas. And German immigrants used to call this guy Saint Nicholas. And when they mixed everything all together, the preacher, Nicholas, ended up as Santa Claus, a guy who knew Jesus had given up everything for us, left heaven to go where he was needed, a guy who knew Jesus had to spend everything that he had in life to pay the price to fix what was broken. This guy loved Jesus. I heard of an unusual Christmas display in a yard once. I love houses that have colorful lights everywhere and festive decorations. I drive by the house on Plaster Mill every night that has the music playing. I drive through the Doe Haven place where they have all those houses lit up. There's a house across the street from us that has beautiful decorations. I love all of that. But this one guy had a life-size nativity scene in his yard. Very realistic. On one side of his yard, it was a beautiful nativity scene, life-size. And he had a sign in front of all that read, God's gift to us. On the other side of his yard, he put up a life-size cross. He put a cross in his yard at Christmas. It was very realistic. And he had a sign in front of that read, our gift to God. Paul said Jesus didn't consider equality with God something to be used for his own advantage, but he made himself nothing. Being made in human likeness, he humbled himself to death, literally, to death on a cross. The stuff we did, the stuff you've done, the stuff I've done in life is so bad, we have broken it so badly that there is no way to fix it. We're just going to die. But Jesus didn't want that. So he said, how about if instead of them, I go? And on the cross, Jesus paid the price and fixed things. Nicholas thought that that was amazing. And he decided he would spend his money and his time and his life telling other people that Jesus fixed things. Nicholas loved Jesus so much that he made Jesus' project his own life's work. Nick was a nice guy, and he helped people fix bad stuff going on in their lives so that he could tell those people about a man who could fix what was really wrong in their lives. I saw a picture of a nativity once where Mary and Joseph and the shepherds are all crowded around looking at the baby in the manger, and Santa comes in and kneels down too. Turns out that's kind of accurate. So we've got a lot of stories, and we've got a lot of movies, and we got a lot of commercials, and we got a lot of jokes about Santa, like, why does Santa have three gardens? Because he loves to ho-ho-ho. What goes ho-ho-ho, 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 thud? Santa laughing his head off, right? Laughing his head off? No. Why is everyone always thirsty at the North Pole? Noel. Noel. Why will Santa go down chimneys on Christmas Eve? Because it suits him. What do you call Santa if he gets stuck in the chimney? Crisp Kringle. What happens if Santa sits on a snowdrift too long? He gets Polaroids. They're getting bad. I'll try one more. I've heard that there are four stages of Santa Claus in a guy's life. First, you believe in Santa. Then you don't believe in Santa. Then you are Santa. And finally, you look like Santa. Or, in my case, your younger brother looks like Santa. And those are good stages, but there's a fifth stage of Santa Claus. And in the last stage, you admire him a lot, because he knew Jesus and used his life best he could to help other people know Jesus too. So 22 years ago tomorrow, a baby was born in Rochester General Hospital. And he's grown up, and he's figured out that it always costs to fix what's broken in the world. He's learned that Jesus is the guy who would love to pay what it costs if people would just ask him to. So Ian is heading out next year on a missions trip that is going to last almost the whole year. He's going to give up a year of his life and travel around the world helping people who are living broken lives discover that they can do better. The guy born on Christmas Day will be out telling people there's another guy born on Christmas Day and how he came here on purpose to fix what's wrong in our world. Basically, next year, Ian will be tossing truth into people's windows, hoping that it lands in people's stockings, and connecting them with a God who loves them like crazy. Ian's going to leave the comfort of home to go where people need to know that better is available, like Nick did, like Paul did, like Jesus did. Ian will go. And if you'd like to help fund that adventure, I can put you in touch. You probably didn't know that tonight's sermon would end up being a commercial, but this might be the commercial that you hear this season that contains the very best gift in it, because you could help Ian travel the world and deliver the good news of a way better life. I heard A guy once described Christmas as a baby shower that had gone completely overboard. But at a baby shower, you give gifts to the parents to honor the baby. And Jesus' parents, when it comes to Mother Mary, she's fine. Seriously, she's got no needs at this point. But if you would like to honor Jesus' father, he's really hoping that many more of his sons and daughters will make it home safely. And you could help that if you wanted to. Because making the world better is about sacrificing. It's about not demanding your rights. It's about doing what's good for others. It's about giving up and serving and loving other people. Jesus is the model. Jesus is the power. Jesus is our hope. It's paying the price to fix what's broken. So, perhaps you would be willing to play the role of Saint Nick and be generous with what you have to the people in your world this year, and in that way help men mend broken hearts and lead people home. Hope you will. Merry Christmas.